hello to the future of choosing your dream kitchen or bath. Buffalo Stone and Tile now house Wyoming's first 100% self-serve showroom, open every day 7:30 to 7. Granite, quartz, porcelain tile, luxury vinyl plank, faucets, hardware, thousands of today's hottest finishes, all ready for you to explore on your schedule. Just stop by, call the number on the door, and get buzzed in. No appointments, no pressure. Buffalo Stone and Tile, 1402 Sugarland Drive, behind WyoVision. Self-serve, stress-free, seriously gorgeous. Design help available by appointment.
Hey Sheridan, it's Laura with YDOT with some exciting news. YDOT completed a traffic study that included your input of the Coffeen Avenue corridor and the Brundage Lane intersection in 2024. And as a result, it has been determined that adding medians from Wendy's to Starbucks and Brundage Lane will improve safety for vehicles, bicycles, and pedestrian traffic while also providing an aesthetic appeal. Join me on Thursday, January 29th at 5 p.m. in the Sheridan College atrium to review maps and visit with our team and the city about these changes coming to Sheridan in 2028.
The following message is presented by Century21BHJ.com.
Hi, this is Jake with Sheridan Fire Rescue. Do you know what to do when driving around emergency vehicles? Slow down, turn on your blinker, and pull to the right. If you can't pull to the right, hang tight and turn on your flashers. When driving by an emergency scene, drive slow and do not drive through traffic cones. Try not to rubberneck, as it takes your eyes off the road and jeopardizes the safety of everyone. Let's work together to keep our city and emergency responders safe.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Wednesday, January 28th, from the foot of the Bighorns in Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting. And this is Public Pulse. This morning we are joined by University of Wyoming Director of Institutional Communication, Chad Baldwin. Good morning, Chad.
Good morning, Floyd.
How's the weather in Laramie right now?
Well, gosh, we're back to being kind of a beautiful, doesn't really feel terribly wintry day. And we had some cold snap. I think everybody did there for a week or so, but warmed back up a bit, and it's beautiful.
It is a really unusual winter, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just because of from my perspective, it's just because it's been pretty warm.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure. Yeah, it's up a little north. I think maybe it's been a little colder, but anyway, it's been. I think there's still plenty of winter to come, though, Floyd. Something tells me.
Same with me. And it has been unusually warm up here as well. But as you said, you know, we got a lot of winter to get through yet, and the majority of our snow doesn't really arrive until next month, maybe the month after. Those big, wet snows, you know, I'm looking forward to those to kind of help everybody out around here.
You bet.
Something that I wanted to speak with you about. Can you bring us up to date on the legislature's Joint Appropriations Committee January 13th vote? This has kind of been all over the news.
Yeah, Floyd. So when it comes to the University of Wyoming, the committee did vote, I think it was like 9-3, to reduce the block grant to the university from the state by $40 million for the biennium, or $20 million a year. That's just for some context here. That's 11% of what UW is currently receiving in the block grant. So this isn't like, you know, somebody had recommended more and they were paring down an increase. This is an actual $40 million cut from what we're currently getting. It's a big chunk of money, has some real potential big ramifications, and so we're just trying to let folks know a little bit about what those might be.
And how would a $40 million biennium cut to the University of Wyoming's state funding translate into real impacts for students, your programs, and your services across not just campus, but extension offices?
Sure. So, Floyd, it's important for me to, I guess I also need to point out, that historically the legislature and the governor have been very supportive of the state's university. So that needs to be said. it's allowed us to do provide an array of academic programs, for example, that over 200 courses of study, research and service activities as a land grant university that are so important to do. You mentioned extension, for example, and so our board of trustees and administration has not made any decisions about this. We haven't gone so far as to say, you know, if this happens, we're going to cut this program or this program or this program. That hasn't happened yet. But just for some context, you know, so I'm going to go back to this $20 million annual figure. The total budget for our College of Business for 1 year is $13 million. Our College of Education is $8 million. So this $20 million cut is essentially the complete and total budgets of two of our seven academic colleges. So that's how the magnitude of it. I'm not going to say we'd cut whole colleges or anything like that. I'm sure that wouldn't be the case, but that kind of gives you an idea of the scope of it.
And when we look at things, a letter from UW President Ed Seidel did note that state finances are not currently in crisis. In fact, my own research looks like we may have a surplus. And in that research, I found an op-ed dated January 20th of this year. Governor Mark Gordon said fear-laden cut-everything chainsaw rhetoric has been imported here for political theater. So what concerns UW most about the timing and the rationale behind the proposed reduction?
Sure. I'd point out that, you know, in years past, when the state's economy has really been struggling and state revenues have declined, the University of Wyoming has taken some fairly major cuts, the most recent one being during the COVID downturn, also back in 2018. I mean, you know, big chunks, and that makes sense during a time when the state is struggling financially. The state's university needs to be like all state agencies and share in dealing with that. That's not, as you pointed out, that's not the situation we're in now. The governor delivered a balanced budget to the Joint Appropriations Committee, including, I think, several hundred million dollars of savings. And so this is not an issue where the state's finances are in trouble. Now, that to be sure, there are lots of issues that legislators have to deal with, K-12 funding being an important one that's being discussed now. I mean, there's a whole litany of things that we wouldn't want to pretend to say aren't important, but it's like this is not a financial crisis for the state. And that's what causes us to use the term like, the president used a term like confounding. It's kind of confounding that this would be facing this sort of situation. You know, you can only kind of go by what has been spoken in public meetings, what's been said in the media as to why the committee wants to do this. And I'm not sure, you know, there appears to be some concern about maybe some of the courses that we've offered in the past. Some things have been said that maybe it's just too fancy down here. Like, it's just, you know, it's our campus is just too nice. And, that sort of thing is sort of like, well, the people of Wyoming, clear back to our founders before we were even a state, wanted to have a world-class university. And that's what generations of Wyomingites have done, is we built a world-class university to give our students in Wyoming a world-class education. And also do service for our key industries and for the people of Wyoming. And it's sort of like, why would we retreat from that at a time when the state's not in any financial distress?
Some colleges are exempt from these cuts. Yes, no?
Yeah. So the language, we have not seen the final written thing yet. But in the vote, there was an indication that we would exempt the College of Education and the College of Agriculture, Life Sciences, and Natural Resources from any reductions. And what that would mean is that the other colleges, instead of being an 11% cut, it would be closer to like 15.4%.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, that's an interesting sort of wrinkle to it.
Now, there's inflation, the lack of employee pay adjustments since 2023. How does that factor into UW's ability to actually absorb a reduction of this magnitude?
Yeah, so those are things that, in a separate measure, the governor had proposed funding for state employee raises, including the university, and the committee eliminated that funding as well. So, I mean, it's, you know, you don't want to always whine about pay, but our employees have, as a whole, have not received any pay adjustments since July of 2023. And it is hard. It's a competitive world in higher ed. We want to get the best and brightest to come here, and it does make it more difficult to recruit those folks and then to retain them here. And so the pay raise issue is significant. And then you mentioned inflation. I mean, it's it has an impact, and it's been people in their own home budgets are seeing it, and it affects the university absolutely as well. And Floyd, just again to point out this idea that we've got all been flush with money over the years. Our block grant in 2013 was larger than it is now. Mm. So now there has been a lot of one-time funding used to build some really nice facilities that actually have added to our operational costs. But when it comes down to that block grant, which is, you know, about 50% of our budget, we're operating on less now than we did, you know, 13 years ago.
Let's look at the long term, Chad. I don't even know if these discussions have been had by funding departments, by individuals coming together and looking at this. But from the university's perspective, are there long term consequences that this could, you know, this level of funding reduction could have for Wyoming's workforce, the economy, and access to the higher education?
You know, when you talk about access, Floyd, and that's one thing that, as I think many people know, the state constitution declares that an education at UW needs to be as nearly free as possible. And we've endeavored to stay close to that mandate. And, you know, our undergraduate tuition for residents here in Wyoming is among the very lowest in the country. That's not even considering the Great Hathaway program that our state leaders have funded, and to the Appropriations Committee's credit, that is proposing an increase in funding for the Hathaway scholarship. But anyway, you know, I can't speak for our administration and trustees on this, but I would guess, you know, some discussion about whether we can maintain that low tuition is going to be something that's going to have to have that discussion if this level of cut goes through. In terms of long-term impacts, I mean, you know, it's like President Seidel, this would cause damage that would last years. You don't tear things down and then suddenly, if you get the money back the next year, you can just rebuild things so quickly. I mean, it's when you lose good people, finding good replacements can take some time. You know, the thing that I think we're trying to tell people is that if this happens, we're just not going to be able to provide everything we currently provide. And that's a wide array of academic programs and great service and research. We're not going to be able to continue to do that level. That's not to say, you know, so maybe academic programs that are going to have to be pared back. So that doesn't mean less quality for the students who come here, but what it does mean is that they have fewer things to choose from. It's the state's only four-year university. We have a responsibility to provide that wide array of options, and maybe that array would have to be cut back. In terms of like programs we do around the state, you know, there's just a whole host of things that I wouldn't want to single any one thing out. That's, you know, because you don't want to. I don't know. It wouldn't be appropriate to do that. But it would mean a reduction in programs that students choose from, and the services that the state relies on.
Is it a waiting game now, Chad? What's the university's next step?
Well, you know, yeah. I mean, you know, the full legislature, yeah, now we'll get these, each house will get the Appropriations Committee's budget. They can amend and change, and ultimately they have to reach some agreement, then that goes to the governor. The governor has a line item veto authority, but what he doesn't have the ability to do is put money back in. And so that's why the full legislature's actions are so important. You know, we're trying to just inform folks Lots of people, as you said, it's made a lot of headlines. People have talked about that, and we're just trying to give people facts about things, and so that's kind of what this is about.
Mm-hmm. On that, I do have to take a quick commercial break. We're going to have more from our University of Wyoming right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Some banks answer to shareholders.
First Federal Bank and Trust answers to the community.
Because as a mutual bank, everyone benefits. Profits stay local.
Supporting nonprofits and community programs with decades of local roots and modern online and mobile banking that fits your life.
More than a bank.
A mutual commitment.
First Federal Bank and Trust. Member FDIC.
Hi, this is Taylor, front of house manager at Frackleton's. When you walk through our doors, you feel it. The perfect mix of style, warmth, and confidence. And that's no accident. It's our team, polished, friendly, and ready to make your night special. From the greetings to the goodbye, we care about your experience as much as your meal. Sheridan's favorite place to connect, celebrate, and unwind. Frackleton's, where great food meets flawless service. Main Street in downtown Sheridan.
Is it tinnitus? Is it tinnitus? Regardless, it's annoying. Hi, this is JT with Ebia Hearing. Ringing in your ears isn't something you have to just live with. Tinnitus affects millions, and treatment has come a long way. From specialized hearing aids to breakthrough therapy like Lanier, we can help reduce tinnitus symptoms over time. Relief is possible. At Ebia Hearing, our specialists can help you find the right path forward. Call 674-8920 to schedule your hearing loss or tinnitus consultation today. That's 674-8920.
Big dealerships have big budgets for big advertising, but the truth is that major sponsorships cost big bucks. Here at Prime Rate Motors, we choose to sponsor our local youth and local worthwhile programs, all the while passing that savings on to you, our customer. We are locally owned with the same ownership and management for over 40 years. If we don't have what you need, we'll find it and we'll stand behind it after the sale. Because we live here, we work here, and we raise our families here. Prime Rate Motors, 2305 Coffeen Avenue.
Feeling the squeeze at the gas pump? Grocery budget taking a hit too? We can help with that. This is David Cook with ERA Care Realty, inviting you to enter our gas and grocery sweepstakes. One lucky winner will get a $200 gift card at Farmers Co-op and $200 in Chamber Bucks. Enter daily on the contest page at SheridanMedia.com.
The gas and grocery sweepstakes presented by ERA Care Realty. You can find it on the contest page on SheridanMedia.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. We're speaking with University of Wyoming Director of Institutional Communication, Mr. Chad Baldwin. Now, researchers at the University of Wyoming School of Energy Resources spent much of the fall semester overseeing the construction of a coal-to-products field demonstration plant at the Wyoming Innovation Center. This is over near Gillette. Chad, what does the construction of this coal-to-products field demonstration plant actually represent for the future of Wyoming coal beyond traditional uses that we all know coal so well for?
Sure. Well, Floyd, it shows that Wyoming's university is working very hard to assure a future for our really vital coal industry, which has been so important to us. Now, a lot of efforts continues to be made to help coal be a continuing source energy production and to do so maybe in a clean way. But this is a whole thing where what could we do with coal in a different way that would create a products that have commercial value? And so we're talking about things like construction materials, like bricks. We're talking about soil amendments like that could be considered fertilizer for agriculture. We're talking about road construction materials like asphalt. All that stuff is being tested, and we're working to bring to commercial application here new uses for Wyoming coal. And what a better place than right there in the Powder River Basin, and you know, it's really a cool project that that the School of Energy Resources has been leading here at UW.
It really is. I mean, coal is essentially carbon, and that atom can, you know, kind of bond to a bunch of different stuff. It can be an essential building block. How does the process change the way coal can be used in this high-value non-energy products like roads and things like that? Is that kind of what they're looking at, the way that I suggested it could be a bond?
You know, I can't get too much. I'm not all that well-versed in the science of it here, Floyd, but I can tell you that, there are properties, of course, as you say, with this carbon that can deal with to produce this stuff. I should also point out this is School of Energy Resources UW, but it's a collaborative thing with Energy Capital Economic Development there in Campbell County. So, you know, as with all these things, it's not just UW off doing things by ourselves. We have partners, and there's industrial partners in this too. I can't give you like a list of the companies or anything like that. But anyway, we just want to finish this thing, get the facility built and really functioning well, and see what it can do for us.
Mm. So it's still a little early to really explore how this project could help diversify Wyoming's economy, or has that already kind of been explored beforehand, before shovels even went in the ground?
I think that there was certainly analysis done to see what is the potential demand. You know, does this have a chance of being financially, does this work? Does it make sense financially for this stuff? And that's being, I think that will continue to be analyzed. I think this is now about, you know, actually doing the conversion, actually producing the products, and it's demonstrating, it's a demonstration plan. So, you know, you're not just testing technology, as they say, you're building a foundation for a more diversified economy for Wyoming.
That's pretty incredible.
We got a lot of coal, so let's find ways to use it.
Yeah, I think that's really incredible. That would be fantastic to kind of see this, our Wyoming coal, become a major building block for the nation. I think that'd be great. One story that I did put up that you guys released a while ago, I got to checking it out. I wanted people to know about it, so I went ahead and I put this up online. University of Wyoming Malcolm Wallop Civic Engagement Program has launched the Wyoming Museums Project. Now, this is a set of modules, and this is in the WyoLearn catalog, and it provides information on local museums found all across the Cowboy State. I think this is a great, longtime listeners know I love museums. I love information out there on history and what we can do within our own hometowns. What inspired the civic engagement to launch this project, the Wyoming Museums Project?
Sure. Now, Floyd, of course, this all goes back to the namesake here, which is the former state legislator and then U.S. senator right from there in Sheridan County, one of those real luminaries in the state's history, Senator Wallop, and we have this civic engagement program in his name, and the professors who work in it and the staff members who work in it, students, are focused on his commitment to civil discourse, public education, public service. So it's about, you know, helping our communities and educators around the state when it comes to excellence in teaching and scholarship and creativity and that sort of thing. So this particular museum project is in a whole line of things that this program does. So the program is providing civics education materials to K-12 schools, like curriculum that teachers in high school can use to teach about civics education. This particular museum thing is for social studies and English language arts teachers who want to build historical and cultural content and resources in their classes, like local information about the history of their communities. And so that's what this is about, and that's their idea, was provide resources to our K-12 teachers, in particular here high school teachers, about these amazing museum assets we have around the state. And there's like 50-plus museums that are organized by county, that sort of thing. So it's very useful information for people to use.
How fantastic is this? You know, when I was a little kid in K through 12 here within this state, we had some individuals within the community actually come into the classroom to give us this type of information. A lot of those people that I used to sit down and listen to when I was a little boy have passed away. And for the longest time, my father and I actually used to talk about this, that history is gone. It in too many instances, it disappears with them. So I think this is a fantastic project. You know, can the layman engage with this? I mean,
you bet. Yep. Yeah, parents, students, teachers, it's easy to use. It's you go to the WildLearn catalog, and there's a civic catalog there, and all you can, you know, find this stuff all online, and people can access it who aren't even teachers. Absolutely. And, you know, Floyd, I agree with you. It's so important to preserve this sort of history. I mean, this is, of course, we're in the 250th celebration of the Declaration of Independence that created our country. So it's a very appropriate time for this sort of thing to be happening. And I personally I worry. I mean, as a kid growing up, I knew many, many World War II veterans, and they really influenced my life. Floyd, they're just about gone now, yeah. all those people. That great, great generation of my grandparents' era is pretty much all gone now, and that leaves a huge hole in our society, in my opinion, and we just can't let that sort of thing fade.
And it's just heartbreaking as we watch the wheels of time kind of go on. It never crossed my mind, you know, and it doesn't, of course, yeah. Because we all have day-to-day stuff to do, but my grandchildren will be growing up in a world without these veterans, these people who essentially saved the world. I didn't think about it then, but I'm certainly thinking about it now. So I think these projects like this are absolutely fantastic. Now, Chad, one more question about this. Can people contribute to this project?
That's a great question, Floyd. I can tell you that the leader of this is Jean Garrison. And she has an endowed professorship in public service here, and she has been very good at fundraising in conjunction with our University of Wyoming Foundation. So if people have interest in contributing, they could contact Jean, who's, by the way, a Sheridan County originally, and then or the university's foundation, absolutely.
Okay, that's fantastic to hear, because there's so many great historians, even just locally, that I've had the pleasure, the honor to sit down and talk to, and they've got these little tiny bits of history that are scattered all over this area, and I know other counties have the same thing, and I would love to see these little bits of history become cataloged and be put up for use by Wyoming's teachers. Get your own local history right there. I think that is so great. Now, Chad, I've run out of time with you. I want to thank you for calling in this morning, partner. It's good to hear from you. I feel like it's been too long.
You bet, Floyd. I always look forward to this every month, and we'll look forward to February.
Yes, sir. All right. When we return, we're going to speak with the Sheridan County Library System. You're listening to Public Pulse, 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Ever wonder where your bank's priorities really are?
At First Federal Bank and Trust, they're right here at home.
No shareholders, just shared values.
Local decision-making, community support, and a long-standing commitment to the people we serve.
Plus the convenience of online and mobile banking.
Banking that matches your values.
First Federal Bank and Trust. More than a bank, a mutual bank. Member FDIC.
At Carroll's Furniture, we say long live the lazy. Why? Because Lazy Boy recliners were made for maximum comfort and chilling like a pro. Kick back in classic Lazy Boy style, whether it's movie night, nap time, or just because you've earned it. From sectionals to iconic recliners, Lazy Boy at Carroll's Furniture brings home comfort in all the right ways. Go ahead, embrace your inner lazy at Carroll's Furniture, 340 North Main in downtown Sheridan, where comfort lives. Visit us at carrollsfurniture.com and find us on Facebook and Instagram. Long live the lazy.
Say hello to the future of choosing your dream kitchen or bath. Buffalo Stone and Tile now house Wyoming's first 100% self-serve showroom, open every day 7:30 to 7. Granite, quartz, porcelain tile, luxury vinyl plank, faucets, hardware, thousands of today's hottest finishes, all ready for you to explore on your schedule. Just stop by, call the number on the door, and get buzzed in. No appointments, no pressure. Buffalo Stone and Tile, 1402 Sugarland Drive, behind WyoVision. Self-serve, stress-free, seriously gorgeous. Design help available by appointment.
Doug, what does full service really mean to wearing Chevrolet?
Bob, how long has your check engine light been on?
Wow, you're clairvoyant.
No, I'm not, but our factory-trained technicians are. They'll do a full diagnostic, check on the light, plus change your oil and check your brakes.
Plus collision repair and detailing?
Plus, with our tire price match guarantee, we have brand name tires at the lowest prices every day. We offer free pickup and delivery with a 10-mile radius. If you can't drive in, it's full service the wearing way.
The kind that keeps people coming back, Doug. Schedule online, wearingsheridan.com.
Friday, February 6th at 7 p.m., the Wyo Theater presents Dance Theater Excursions, Salt Lake City's renowned repertory dance theater. Excursions showcases the company's versatility, athleticism, and artistic depth. Their works range from bold contemporary pieces to elegant modern classics, pushing the boundaries of movement and meaning. Experience the power and poetry of the human body in motion. Get your tickets for Excursions at the Wyo box office or online at wyotheater.com.
Looking for a night of great live music? Friday, January 30th, head to Sheridan College's Whitney Center for the Arts for an unforgettable evening with Sheridan's own Americana band, The Two Tracks. Known for soulful harmonies and rich storytelling inspired by the American West, The Two Tracks will perform your favorites and new music from their fifth album, Live for the First Time. Dinner tickets are sold out, but concert tickets are still available. The Two Tracks, Friday, January 30th at Sheridan College. Tickets at sheridan.edu/arts.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. We're proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. This morning, for our second part, we're speaking with Sheridan County Library System Director Amy Long. Good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Well, I got to ask. I know it's been a while. Mm-hmm. How were your holidays?
They seem like they happened a very long time ago, but I realize it hasn't been that long ago. They were great, actually. We had very good holidays.
The thing of it is, when your day is that busy, a week can feel like a month.
Yeah.
You know? And I imagine with everything that's going on with the library system right now, one day can feel like forever. So the big renovation project. Yeah. Let's break this down into a real quick, brief overall summary for those who may not know what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do we got?
Okay. Well, we have started with the renovations that were funded by the grant that we received. And they have started out in the branches first. So we bid that project separately from Fulmer so we could get that going. While we finished up the plans for Fulmer, there is a timetable on the grant where all the work needs to be finished, ideally by between September and November. So,
oh my goodness,
fast.
That's real quick.
Yeah. So we bid out the branches project at the end of last year, and they got started this month over in Tongue River, and they start next week over in Claremont, and then in the middle of February, they start in Story. And so they're overlapping those and should be completed sometime around the end of March is roughly our timeline, so that all the branches are complete by then.
That's fantastic to hear. But at the same time, it just makes me wonder, why did we have to attach a rocket to the back of this project? Was this a caveat of the grant itself?
It was. I applied for the grant in 2024. And that was quite a process where you kind of have to apply and you know, get your application and you rewrite it a couple of times to make sure it's clear and that you've hit all the marks. And then it goes into consideration. And then after consideration, it goes into contract. And after contract, it goes into getting the design part of the project. So we bid out for the design last year and have Arete on as our project manager. And they're the ones who are running the bid for the general contractor and procurement and that kind of thing. And so we worked last year on design based on feedback that had been gathered by Cameron during the last capital campaign around the branches, because he originally wanted to redo shelving and carpet and furniture, but they didn't get enough of the funds together for that because of COVID. And so that's why we applied for the grant, because it was available to help assist with that part of the project. So we utilized the feedback and the legwork he had done for the application and for the design process, as well as obviously talking with the staff and comments that they've heard from patrons and just observing how patrons utilize the building, so that we could get this in, get the funds moving, and get the grant in place so that we could finish up by the deadline.
My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
So much.
It's a lot.
So much before you even get started.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about this getting started.
Mm-hmm.
So work has begun at the Tongue River branch in Ranchester?
Yep. That's
all right. Improvements that are being made there.
Mm-hmm.
What are they?
Well, if you're familiar with the Tongue River branch, the children's area was in sort of this back kind of room. It was basically a room, but we opened it up to have the children's collection in it. And we're actually flipping that because of the large growth in Ranchester of single family homes and families moving out there. They've seen an increase in family usage, and we anticipate more of that. So we're actually flipping the nonfiction side of the library with the children's side. So one half of the libraries you come in will be children's.
Oh, wow.
And the other half will be fiction and teens and the computers. And then you can go into that room. It's not actually very small. It actually fits the whole collection of nonfiction. And there'll be an opportunity for people to sit and study or read in there, as well as having some obviously seating out in the library itself as well. So that's the biggest thing, is taking the children's area and expanding it out into the half of the library. So that we can have more room for families and story time and those kind of things out there. We don't have all of that programming planned yet, but that's the intention eventually.
Now you'll have a spot to get it planned for, though. What's the timeline that they've kind of given you in regards to, hey, we're going to have the paint on the walls, we're going to be finished then?
It should be for Ranchester, will be finished first because it was the one started first. But yeah, it should be around that mid to late March-ish timeline. Obviously things can change and adjust during construction, so I always leave that finish date pretty loose. Yeah. But that's our estimate at this time.
We call it fluid. Leave it fluid. Yeah.
But that's our target.
Claremont and Story, they're mm-hmm. next up.
Yes.
What's going to happen out there?
So for Claremont, they recently had already addressed their ceiling and lighting with the help of amazing local kind of wizard of all trades, Mike Buss, and his wife Tammy is the one who works at the library. And so the ceiling and lighting is already done there. But we will also be looking at carpet, a couple new furniture pieces, a different layout to sort of maximize how the space is used, and looking at how we can just create more of that refreshed look, but still the same old homey, wonderful library that they have in Claremont.
Yeah, do you even have on record the last time improvements like this were made to some of our branches?
Well, with the ceiling, they did it last summer. But I don't know when they originally got carpet or furniture. It kind of is different depending on each location. But most of the branches, I don't think, have had carpet in a long time. So getting new carpet and addressing any lighting or ceiling issues at Story and Tongue River are definitely going to be helpful.
Well, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing what these refreshing projects can do
yeah.
for an establishment. It can really bring life back into something. Mm-hmm. And you might not even notice,
yeah.
you know, that it needed it until mm-hmm. it's done. And then you're like, oh my goodness, this place is, it looks brand new, but these simple things mm-hmm. were changed. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to timelines for that project, mm-hmm. have those been put out?
Yeah. So if you go to our website, there is a renovation section now on our website on the far right that will have a page for each location, including the Wyoming room, and that will have updates there. The plans for each of the branches are on there as well. And Claremont's project, they're closed this week while we move collection out of the main area and into one of their other areas so that they can provide some services during the renovation. And then the renovation starts next week.
Okay, so there are sections of Claremont that are closed right now.
As we move books, and then it will open up again.
Okay, now bringing it all back to the center here mm-hmm. at the Fulmer branch, you said there were some things that Mr. Duff had planned out.
Yeah,
couldn't get the funding for because mm-hmm. we've had a lot of renovations, new generator, all kinds of great things.
They got funding, thankfully, for the roof that was desperately needed to be replaced, and the HVAC over above the inner circle. They were able to redo the inner circle. The Wyoming room also shares that HVAC system. And so they did quite a lot with the funds they were able to raise. The one thing they didn't get to was carpet and furniture, paint, that kind of thing. And so that's where we took that project that they had worked so hard on and then used the grant to try and finish it off.
I was going to say, almost kind of putting the ribbon on the whole thing.
Yeah, I know the community and Mr. Duff worked so hard to do everything they could to get this library, the Fulmer Library, brand spanking new for everybody. Yeah. And having the opportunity to utilize some grant funding in this way to help complete it after everyone had worked so hard to do all that fundraising and then COVID just sort of interrupted everything. It feels really good to be able to help continue that dream and that plan.
I think it's fantastic as well, because you are right. COVID interrupted everything.
It did.
All right, moving on down the line. When we mm-hmm. look at the final plans being complete, mm-hmm. Will the public have any influence on anything being planned currently?
Well, a lot of it is already laid out, but the way... So I've been through renovations and also new building projects before, and the thing about it is you're never really done. Renovations never really stop, and feedback never really stops. You watch how people utilize it after you have the furniture down, and the nice thing about everything that we're doing is that it can all move. Mm. I don't really do build-ins if I can help it because you get stuck in that position.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so a lot of it is still... We can adjust plans after things get into place at the end and see how it's working for the community. Because sometimes you have a hit and everything's exactly right. And sometimes you have a couple misses where you have to make some additional changes based on kind of how it looks in real life or how people are using it in real life. And so I think that's the thing to remember is feedback is always happening. Every day we see, you know, are people comfortable? Are they finding the seats they need? Are they utilizing the space the way they want? And the staff store that information as we were going through the planning process. And then also afterwards, like adjustments will be made based on how people are using it and how they're finding it useful.
That's really interesting. I never really thought about that until just now. You might stick a table in this corner thinking, boy, I would use the heck out of that. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you realize nobody's using it.
Yeah.
So I need to relocate this.
Yep.
So is that the kind of stuff that you and the staff are really watching?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we didn't do formal focus groups one because those are always hard to schedule and get people there. And then it's like, oh, here's the time. Go with your feedback and now stop. And so it's more of an ongoing process. We also were under that time crunch. So we relied a lot on the feedback that had already been gathered. And then, of course, the input from the staff on how patrons in the community are currently using the space, what things they come in to accomplish. How can we make that as easy as possible? How can we look at the layout of the building and the collection in a new way to make sure it's easily accessible and attractive and easy to browse? things like that.
You know, so much goes into a library.
Mm-hmm.
And between you and Mr. Duff and Zola, it, like all these people have been kind of informing me
mm-hmm.
about how busy, how detailed,
mm-hmm.
how a library is truly used by a community.
Mm-hmm.
My eyes have been open over the last couple of years, and I don't say that to, you know, kind of blow smoke. It's I think the library is something that we all grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
It's always in the back of your mind, but mm-hmm. sometimes pretty far back there.
Yeah.
The library is a living, breathing place mm-hmm. full of parties and celebrations. And I mean, it's a great place to go.
Yeah. There's learning in all different styles. I always say, like, we have the physical collection, but there's also connections to community resources that we provide. Like right now, we have a fly fishing course. I believe they're full, but... a fly fishing program happening where a community member is coming in and teaching people how to tie flies. And so that not only connects them to this new skill, but also to the community partner that we're working with who has more resources he can share on that. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And you get to meet people who are like-minded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, when we're done with this course, you want to hit the river. I know a spot that I've been looking at for years or whatever.
Yep.
Make a new friend.
It's that in-person connection and really helping people feel like they can find that community connection through the library.
And community connection's important. I mean, it may sound, you know, risking, sounding hokey here.
Yeah.
But when's the last time you made a new friend
right?
as an adult?
Mm-hmm.
It was easy to do as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little more difficult as an adult. And if you're looking to get involved, that's a great starting spot. You know, mm-hmm. head to the library. See what's going on within your community. All right. I'll get off my soapbox here. Now, the Wyoming Room.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that a little bit. Still able to access it?
Yes. So we're moving to online access and appointment access. Because we have a lot to address in that room for the renovation. And I always tell people, item by item, it is the largest collection I have. I think of it as its own kind of branch. And I realize it's part of Fulmer, but in my head, it's this separate entity. And because there's so much in there that we have to be able to stay organized with it when we move things around in order to lay carpet and get lighting and fix the foundation area that's kind of sinking, we will need to have lots of time to prepare and make sure that we are doing that in an orderly fashion. We know where everything is. We know where everything's going. We have it all packed up in a way we can maneuver it around so that different areas of the room can get done for the renovation at different times. It's quite the project. And so we're gathering the two part-time staff members who are in there currently, adding some resources from one of our other departments, or a couple of other departments, so the employees can work together and make it through all the elements of organizing that room. And so we will continue to answer patron requests through our online form. You can also use that online form to ask for an appointment to view a particular collection. You can also ask for a tour if you want to check out what's happening in the room. It's not like the doors are locked. We're just coalescing the staff during a specific time and trying to work with a more project plan kind of approach. But access to the room will still be there. Access to the archives will still be there as much as we can. And then when the renovations are happening, we might have to make appointments around that.
Amy, are there items in there that you have to take into consideration a historical preservation when you move them?
Oh, yeah. Pretty much. I mean, I won't say everything because we have just such a variety of things in there. But yeah, everything that is in there has historic significance in some way or another. And so we have to be thoughtful about how we're presenting that collection so that the community can utilize it. But then also the items that could be fragile, original documents that could be fragile, very old collections like... we have the whole Sheridan Press archive.
Wow.
All of those things we have to handle with care and make sure that we're doing the best we can to keep them in good condition. And so that's one of our major drivers
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, when you start moving this stuff around, mm-hmm. do you have a big meeting beforehand and kind of tell everybody it is a white glove day, folks?
That's what we're doing. Yeah, that's exactly how we're going to have to work through the project, is kind of meeting together, deciding what area we're working on, and then work through and be careful and on the same page. And that's why having everyone together at the same time will help.
Now, we can make appointments mm-hmm. if we want to do some research. Mm-hmm. All we got to do is just get in touch with you. Yep. There's things that we can do. So it's not putting lock and key.
No.
You're closed out.
No.
Your information is still there, folks. You can still access all of it. You just got to take a step before mm-hmm. you do that. Now, I'm running out of time with you. So all this fantastic renovations taking place, when it comes to programming itself,
yeah.
how will that operate around everything?
We'll do our best to simply shift programs when we can, but we also have not planned as much at Fulmer this year, knowing that those are going to be coming into place. Of course, we'll always do the summer reading program and some of those staples, like the Sheridan Chess Club and things. Claire York's is meeting this season and we'll meet in the fall. Those things will happen, and we'll just make sure we have a space to do it in. And if something with the timeline changes and we have to shift things around, we'll make sure to communicate that out.
And greatest source of information when it comes to anything having to do with the library, folks, is to jump online.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at their website, and you can get just about anything that you need, whether that be programming or locations for programming. Is there anything about the renovation, the programming, or anything going forward that I haven't asked you that you would like the public to know?
I think it's important for everyone to remember how much and how invested the staff are in the library being successful for the people who come in and use it, whether it's the Wyoming Room, Ranchester Branch, Story. We care as much about that building and the collection that's in there as you do. And we appreciate your feedback and your questions. And I'm happy to talk through the designs once they're out, which should be in a few weeks for Fulmer, and talk through like what we're anticipating. But I think just knowing that all of our hearts are in the right place of, we want this library to be great and we want the community to really enjoy it. And that means that we pay attention to what the community wants and what they're looking for and how they're utilizing the space now, and continue to listen once the renovation is over as well.
Amy, thank you so much for coming in this morning. It's Absolutely. Always a pleasure seeing you, my friend.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
What if your bank actually shared your values?
That's the difference at First Federal Bank and Trust.
No outside shareholders, just shared values.
Just people banking with people and investing right back into our community.
Supporting local nonprofits.
Strengthening the place where we call home.
With local branches and convenient online and mobile banking.
Banking without shareholders.
You belong at First Federal Bank and Trust. Member FDIC.
Are winter illnesses keeping you or your family from work, school, or play? When fever, cough, or body aches strike, don't wait it out. At Same Day Health and Imaging, we're here for you 7 days a week, offering quick, compassionate care. Illnesses don't follow a schedule, but our extended and weekend hours have you covered. Same Day Health and Imaging, located at 1470 Sugarland Drive between Walmart and WyoVision. Walk-ins welcome or schedule an appointment. Visit SheridanSameDay.org to learn more.
The following message presented by First Federal Bank and Trust, Sheridan's only mutual bank. Visit eFirstFederal.bank.
Are you looking for exciting ways to connect with nature and the outdoors? Sheridan Community Land Trust Discovery Sessions will help you learn new ways to explore and enjoy our beautiful Bighorn's backyard. New Discovery Sessions are always being added. See what you can discover under the Events tab at SheridanCLT.org.